information provided on Dr. Tom Rozelle Live by Dr. Tom Rozelle, D.C., interview guests, show co-hosts, or substitute hosts is not intended or implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. It is for general information purposes only. Information from this broadcast should not replace the appropriate consultation and examination process by a licensed physician. Always consult your own physician prior to changing any current medical directive or prescription.
This is Dr. Tom Rozelle Live on 105.9 FM WMAL.
Welcome to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live. This is Dr. Tom Rozelle. I have a very special program for you, and one that is probably very appropriate for the season, one that is going to stop you from enjoying the rest of the summer and into the fall and so forth. What are we talking about? We're talking about low back pain. You know, many of you have been out already, and after 2 years of shutdown, you want to hit the golf course and the tennis courts and go hiking and camping and so forth. But there's this thing that keeps sneaking up on you, and it's called, oh, my aching back. It hurts, and it's shutting you down. It's not allowing you to do what you need to do. So how do you avoid the drugs? How do you avoid surgery? How do you avoid the doc that says, well, you know, we're going to watch it, and, you know, we might have to go in and do a laminectomy. We may have to go in and do whatever it is. Well, in my world, the greatest majority and over 90% of those things can be resolved very effectively. So when I talk about stuff like this, I got to bring in the experts. And in our practice, in our office, there's none other than the professor, Dr. Harlan Browning. And we're going to get into the intimacy of this. Dr. Browning, Harlan, welcome.
Good morning, Tom.
This is a very, you know, it's something that affects way too many people. And it's a lot of it's lifestyle. A lot of it is mechanics. A lot of it is, you know, predispositions and so forth. But let's get into, you know, why people have back pain. Then I want to get into, you know, the progression of it and then what can be done about it and the ramifications. But, you know, you treat more patients when it comes to these types of things effectively, you know, and providing the opportunity for them not to have surgery. So let's start with the basics. You know, this affects literally a huge portion of the population. And so let's start with that and let's go to why.
Yes, you know, certainly low back pain is probably a top five reason a person seeks medical help across all different, you know, platforms of healthcare. And, you know, it's extremely expensive to not only treat the lost time and work. So it's something that's extremely common. I think because it is so common, a lot of people do not think it's that big of a deal until it gets progressive and then it becomes chronic and then it can become debilitating and people will sometimes develop what we call an impairment. They, you know, they lose strength or they lose function.
You know, what people have to understand, and I want to discuss it a little bit with you, is the problem can stem from your low back and anywhere in the spine. And the pain doesn't necessarily have to be there. It can be extensive, as you said, in your legs and your feet and numbness and neuropathic problems. When I was in school, and there was a guy by the name of John Mazion, who was the head of the orthopedic department, and he said, you know, there's three types of presentations, low back pain with leg pain, and leg pain by itself, all coming from the low back. And he distinguished them relative to which one is the most significant. And I was at the day, back in the day, and obviously history has proven that when you have leg pain, sciatica or femoral pain, the front of the leg, without any back pain, that's generally the most difficult to treat. Do you think that's true, or do you find it differently? And, you know, what seems to be the balance between them?
Yeah, I would definitely agree. In that case, we often refer to that as neurogenic claudication. In other words, the nerve is being slowly choked. And I think that's a little bit more common in older folks that have stenosis. In other words, the spinal canal, either the central canal or the lateral recesses where the nerve roots come out, get progressively smaller because we grow arthritis in there and the disc space narrows. So very often that nerve gets progressively compressed and then we start to present, like you said, with just, you know, leg pain or maybe numbness in the foot. And as we all know, nerves don't like to be compressed for long periods of time. So the longer they stay compressed, the greater likelihood that you're going to see other symptoms besides pain. Like you're going to see atrophy. You might look and say, hey, my calf on the right side is is a lot smaller than the left side. That means that that nerve that's going to that calf can't supply it the information. So the muscle is literally withering away.
Wow. You know, when I was an intern back in the day, you and I went to the same school. I inherited this patient, as we, you know, did from the other interns and other residents and so forth. He's a truck driver, and he used to do long haul stuff. And he came in with pretty significant back pain, and it was radiating into the lateral aspects of his legs and right into the buttocks area. And we treated him very successfully, turned himself around really well. And then one day he came in, you know, just to have things checked out, and he said, "Doc," he said, "I'm still doing great. Really appreciate it." He said, "But," he said, "I didn't tell you," and he kind of was, you know, looking around and soft spoken, "but I was having a problem with, you know, erectile dysfunction." And he said, "It's working again. Did that have anything to do with my low back?" I started laughing. I said, "Yeah, absolutely. It had a lot to do with your low back." So the nerves that go to the low back go to many different areas. It goes to the genitalia, that goes to the colon and so forth. So we could have, and my question to you is, how often do we have these concomitant symptom presentations along with low back pain, man or woman?
I think it's probably a little bit more common than we'd like to believe. I also think that maybe the symptoms are very subtle. So what you're referring to is what we call a somatovisceral response. The somatic system, in this case, the muscles and the skin and the bones and the nerves, are being irritated. And because they crosstalk or communicate at the same level with the organs, so the common patterns, like you said, would be urinary function or, you know, bowel movement. So some folks who have chronic low back pain will get progressively more constipation. And in some cases, and these are more rare, that there can be such compression to that lower part of the low back, more so in the sacral region, that we call it Cauda-Equini syndrome, which is actually a medical emergency. So if a person really hurts their back and they can't control their bowels or they can't control their bladder, now this doesn't happen a lot, but that's a significant situation that needs immediate attention.
You know, those are things that people don't really understand. And here's, you know, an interesting presentation. More so than guys, women seem to have a tendency towards urinary incontinence as they get older, and sometimes when they're younger. And we've treated a lot of it over the years and very successfully. All of a sudden, a guy gets older, and he starts having some urinary incontinence, and which is not as usual for a male as it is for a female. But is that always representative of a structural low back where the nerves are being compressed, they go to the bladder so they can't control it, or is it hormonal as it is with many other situations?
No, I mean, it certainly can be other factors. I mean, the obvious, you know, the elephant in the room would be, is there an underlying prostate problem the person doesn't know of? So, you know, the prostate surrounds the area where the bladder is, so it puts compression on it. Does the person have a bladder disorder? You know, there's congenital things where the size of the ureter, or these are the tubes that allow the urine to flow, sometimes can be smaller. Although it's rare, sometimes guys can have urinary tract infection. So there's other things that can cause it. So anytime a person has a urinary or a bowel dysfunction with back pain, you need to look at both sides of the coin, because sometimes you can have just pure back pain and you can have a purely a bladder problem on the other side.
You know, low back pain is it's a common entity, as I said earlier in the program, and the majority of the population at some point, and the statistics go up to about 90% of everybody will have some sort of low back pain. And, you know, the interesting thing, and the applause to our field and chiropractic and applied kinesiology, is that we are the most effective and cost-effective application to resolving low back pain, which is kudos for us, but it really bears that out. I mean, bar everything else, regardless of its medication, surgical intervention, and surgery is 50% successful, and success means it doesn't get worse or it gets somewhat better, but the 10-year studies don't look that great. So you always want to do something much more conservative in its approach that actually will work and rehab and strengthen the body and look at the biochemistry. So my next question to you is, you know, we know that we have a structural, chemical, emotional platform that we look at everything from. What are the triggering mechanisms of low back pain? Is it just, you know, somebody hurt themselves, or all of a sudden this back pain comes on for no reason? What are we looking at? What are the mechanisms that people are overlooking when they go to a traditional approach that we pick up very quickly and subsequently resolve faster?
Well, you know, certainly there can be a mechanical problem. In other words, the individual joints in the low back, we call those facets, they don't move properly. And when that happens, we get reactivity of all the tissue that surrounds it. The muscles become progressively shorter. We initiate inflammation. And then we start the pain process. And that typically can happen from, I think more commonly now than ever before, lack of movement. We sit in a chair. We work at a desk at a computer all day long. Certainly it can be because of injury. I don't see that as much like I did 20 years ago because people don't move. It can be because progressive degenerative changes. And there's some other subtle factors that play in metabolic and chronic inflammatory as well. But the overwhelming, I would say, is a mechanical reason that has led to some sort of degeneration.
You know, one of the things that seems to be in our world a very common presentation that traditional physicians are going to miss in a chronic inflammatory reaction to injury. So somebody gets hurt a little bit, but they have this cascade of swelling, inflammation. You know, when I tell patients, when you think of inflammation, think of acid. When you think of acid, you know, it's going to produce pain. Is irritation in the intestinal tract, bowel, reflexive, you know, to the spine, because we have these channels, these lymph channels, the channels that get rid of toxin and waste and inflammation. That go directly to the low back. So is it often that you see somebody with a bad dietary pattern or eating things that they're sensitive to, those types of exposures that ultimately cause a cyclic low back irritation that just doesn't seem to want to break?
Yeah, there's always a lot of crosstalk between the organs and the muscles and the connective tissue at the same level. So like you said, when we have a chronically inflamed gut, be it because of a bad diet or maybe there's a bacterial overgrowth that's not very healthy for us, then we can present with GI symptoms, gas, bloating, all those things. But we can certainly see a person have maybe a chronic low-grade back tightness or irritation. So the person treats it symptomatically by maybe taking an Advil or some over the counter. But the problem with that is because those medications are very caustic to the digestive tract, they basically propagate the issue. So they get into this wind up. They try to treat one problem, but they cause another one. But because they don't make the association that there might be a correlation between the two sides being the GI issue and the low back, then this goes on for years and years and years.
Just unrelenting cycle of pain patterns that don't go away.
Yes.
You know, so quickly, I want to get into it a little bit more after the break. How do you distinguish where? You know, if you go to a physician and they say, well, you have low back pain, take this medication. But to be able to be effective to change things, you've got to know exactly where it's coming from to be able to go directly to that. So just staying with the spine, we're coming up to a break pretty quickly, and I want to continue this over. How do you begin to determine the where this thing is coming from?
The most important thing is actually speaking and talking with the patient, taking time to sit with them and ask them, you know, when did it start? What makes it better? What makes it worse? If you actually listen to the patient, they're going to most of the time give you the diagnosis. Now, your orthopedic tests and your neurological tests and your x-rays, those are fantastic and they're necessary, but those should be confirmatory to what you're already, you're already suspecting after the person tells you their problem.
Let's hold that thought, and we're going to stop for a break just for a second or two here. We have some people that we have to applaud and pay attention to. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rizzo Live, my guest in studio, the professor, Dr. Harlan Browning. We'll be right back. Don't go away.
Dr. Tom Rozelle Live continues now on 105.9 FM WMAL.
Welcome back to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live. That's who you're listening to. And my guest, Dr. Howland Browning, the professor, we're talking about your low back pain and how to avoid medication and potential surgery and injections. Now, I've spent my career 45 years of dealing with more low back problems and spinal problems than I can care to think about. And fortunately, successfully. But the end of the day is, why is it so common? And we're talking about how you can differentiate the mechanisms. Dr. Browning will be your presenter, your host, this Wednesday evening, June 1st at the Rozelle Center for Healing in Fairfax. All you have to do to register for that is go online at rozellecare.com, scroll down, hit the button, and register your seat. There is no cost to attend. It's our gift to you. Our commitment is ongoing education to the public and to make sure that you have the tools to help yourself. Or simply call 703-698-7117 and register for the class. Dr. Browning, welcome back. Let's talk a little bit more about the how you differentiate. Where how do you know it's low back opposed to something else? Is there other places in the spine that can cause low back pain, but it looks like it's located there? A lot of people get very confused.
When you do an exam, it gives you a lot of indication where the back pain is coming from, or at least you hope it's going to give you information. So one of the things that we try to do, and this is not unique to chiropractic, it's universal to all, people who deal with musculoskeletal problems. We try to actually reproduce the pain. We try to make the person have a little bit of discomfort, because when we can reproduce it, we can focus in on the tissues that are involved. So there's different orthopedic tests that we can do. Certainly we're going to look at posture and form and function. Does the person have a good upright posture, or is there some sort of distortion there? Is there a subtlety of a high hip or a rotated hip or a low shoulder? Do they walk normally? And do they have good global muscle strength? There's a lot of muscles that make up the core of the body outside of the abdominals. We spend so much time talking about the abs. Well, that six pack is really just a small portion of our core. So we have to look at the pelvic floor and the diaphragm, the oblique muscles. These are all the portions that make up a box that surround our low back. And ultimately, we probably are going to get some imaging, because that's going to help us confirm the extent of the problem. Does the person have degeneration that shows up on film? Do they have thinning of the disc? Do they have bulging of the discs? So when you have all that information, it becomes very straightforward in most cases to come up with a diagnosis and a good treatment plan that doesn't involve just taking medication or putting ice on it and just kicking the can down the road.
Medication is, in my opinion, and always has been, is such a horrible situation from the aspect it doesn't resolve anything. It dumbs down the symptom processes. Very few situations that I can name after 45 years of practice that the medication actually fixed anything. At best case scenario, somebody has a spasm and they take something that's an antispasmodic. If that's the sole problem before anything else shifts, maybe they'll get some relief. And if they do some stretching and things of that nature, they'll get back to normal. But generally, it quiets the symptom to the place where people push through and they make matters worse. Now you have muscles, as you said, are imbalanced. One side's too long, the other one's too short. And you have joint spaces that begin to rub together. And in the presence of inflammation, now you have an arthritic cascade that takes place.
Yeah, so the degenerative changes usually are indicative of instability in that area. So the longer that instability is in place, the more progression you get and the more arthritis. And the one thing that I don't think is stressed enough in, physical medicine, the stuff that we do, and certainly in orthopedics, is there's a lot of ligaments that surround these joints. And these ligaments, and you'll see it on MRI, get physically bigger over time. They hypertrophy, they grow. And I personally believe it's an underappreciated aspect of the chronic back pain. That's like having more and more spider webs form in your basement. The longer you let those webs form, the more extensive they get and the longer it takes to get rid of them. So you know, those types of things that we see on imaging really give us the history of the problem.
And also how long it may take to resolve the problem once you start treatment.
Absolutely. Most folks think that there's a quick fix. And trust me, if we had a magic pill, I would be selling it on late night TV and I would be living on my own private island. It doesn't exist.
No, it's hard work. Lifestyle gets us into a crux sometimes and, you know, causes us, the degenerative changes that we've been talking about and the breakdown, the inability of tissue to respond. You add the biochemistry so it doesn't have the fuel, if you will, to heal things. And you got patients that we see who've spent years with intermittent pain. It starts, it comes, it goes. And, you know, now it's chronic and it's always at that plus three, plus four until they bend over and do something. Now it's a plus eight or seven and they're in tremendous amount of discomfort. We're coming up to a break. And what I want to do is I want to walk people through this. I want to take a specific scenario, walk it down the path a little bit, and show them what takes place. My guest in studio, Dr. Howland Browning, your host this Wednesday evening, first of June. I'm getting confused, but we'll straighten that out as we come back. Don't go away. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rizzo Live.
This is Dr. Tom Rozelle Live on WMAL.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live. My guest, Dr. Harlan Browning, we affectionately call the professor. It's only because he's amazing. He's so smart and somebody who I sit and even after my 45 years in practice, I'm constantly learning something from this man. This Wednesday evening, he'll be your host, your presenter at the Rozelle Center for Healing in Fairfax. And he'll be talking about your aching back, but more importantly, how do you avoid the medications you may be taking chronically? How do you avoid the surgery your doctor's saying that may end up coming down the pike, whether it's minimally invasive surgery or it's extensive surgery? There's once you cut, you're cut, and we want you to understand there are options that you can get back to normal. Dr. Browning, welcome. And so let's start with that. You know, people are told that eventually it's going to happen no matter what. They're going to break down, they're going to get degenerative disease, they're going to get this, and they're not going to be structurally what they used to be. Some of that is true, but as you know and I know, we see thousands of patients over a period of many years that have terrible-looking spines on x-ray, and they have no pain, and they're very mobile and flexible. And yet you see people who have good-looking spines, if you will, on x-ray, where the radiologist says there's nothing wrong here, but they're in huge amount of pain and discomfort and immobility. How do we distinguish between the two of them? And the better question is, why?
Well, you know, and you bring up a really good point. You can't diagnose the extent of the person's problem purely by what you see on the x-ray. The examination has to parallel that, meaning if a person has a lot of – their spine is just beat up. Let's just put it that way. But yet their gait is good, their reflexes are good, their sensation's good, and their strength is good, then that person is really stable. And you need to be really careful to suggest that they need something invasive like surgery. And for the most part, and I'm seeing this more and more, and I'm very pleased, there's most low back docs that I work with won't touch those people because they can't be sure that the surgery is going to make any difference whatsoever. So again, you've got to make sure that there's a correlation between the exam and the x-ray before you start giving up hope. And the good thing is there's not many people out there that have back pain that need surgery. The overwhelming amount of folks that have that pain can be rehabilitated and helped with things outside of the realm of an operating room.
You know, it's crazy when you particularly take a historical retro view, as I do, after all these years of seeing people, and they come in with unbelievable pain, and sometimes within a visit, two visits, the majority of that pain is gone, where they've been suffering with it and taking tons of medications over a period of years. But, you know, in low back pain, it's really true that everything is connected to everything else. The ankle bone is connected to the knee bone is connected to the hip bone, and so forth. Let's start from the platform up. How many people do we see that their back pain actually starts in their feet?
Yeah, so, you know, what you're referring to, the most common cause would be hyperpronation. Person has a flat foot. And if their foot is, you know, significantly more flat on one side than the other, then that effectively causes the leg bone, the femur and the tibia to rotate internally, which makes the leg functionally shorter. Well, that makes our pelvis less stable, which makes the low back become compromised. Compounding that, and I know you see this as much as I do, people have a tendency to wear the same pair of shoes for years. So the shoe That's will true. Wear down according to their pronation, which makes it even worse. But yet they don't want to believe that a good pair of shoes can help. And then you tell them, hey, just spend 30 minutes this weekend, get yourself a pair of shoes, and let's start from there. And then they inevitably say, I can't believe this made that much of a difference.
Yeah, it's huge. And if you go in and you look at the feet properly, and then you support them, you can re-educate the muscles of the feet. And the other thing that I want people to understand is that the nerves that come from the low back also affect the feet. The feet, if there's been injury or trauma, somebody's been an athlete, they've hit too hard, they've jumped off a chair, whatever they've done, sometimes mechanically will irritate those ligaments that we've talked about in fascia. And there's no support mechanism now to the structure portions that we're talking about. You fix that. Now, everything else that you fix on top of that is a piece of cake. But if you don't go there first, nothing resolves.
Again, that's right. And the good thing is there's really great technology now to quantify how well your feet support you and how well you use them. You know, obviously in our office, we do gait scans that are automated. So there's a force plate that tells us exactly how much force the person uses when they walk and when they stand. So it's objective and you can treat the person, be it their low back or their foot, and redo the gait scan. And it's completely different. Sometimes it blows my mind, the changes. It looks like a completely different person.
Yeah, we've always done spinal examinations where we use plumb lines back in the day, old technology. You know, we've always focused on the upper portion, but here's the feet. The feet's your foundation, just like a basement in the house. And if that foundation isn't stable, nothing above it's going to be stable. And you're going to continue irritating an area that was already previously irritated, so to speak. And that's something that, you know, I see you watch people walking down the hallway constantly. And, you know, I'll sit there and say, what are you looking at? And you said, look at their feet. And that's part of the puzzle. And that's the piece that so many practitioners, whether they're just a straight physiatrist, a medical physician, a PT, physical therapist, or other docs, lose that concept for whatever reason. Or maybe they didn't really appreciate how significant it is. But if the window's cracked on the third floor, you can keep replacing the window, but you got to fix the foundation to stop the cracking. Same with
that. Yeah, and, you know, I would extend to that I think an I don't want to say appreciate, but an underanalyzed area when it comes to low back pain is hip function, regardless if the person has any hip pain. You can't disassociate the hip from the pelvis and the pelvis from the sacroiliac joint and the sacroiliac joint from the lumbar spine, because they're all in it together because of connections anatomically, muscles that cross all these joints. So I classically see folks that have on again, off again back pain that they've maybe had treated or that gets a little better but keeps coming back, that their issue is that they have so much restriction in their hip, or maybe that the position of the femur is not ideal, so it puts all this strain on their SI joint, which ultimately impacts their low back. So you got to look at, you know, all of that when you're considering what you thought was just an L4 problem.
My guest in studio, Dr. Harlan Browning, the professor. He will be your presenter this Wednesday evening at the Results Center for Healing in Fairfax. Join him. If you have low back pain, stuff that's come and gone over a period of many years or even a few months, and you're contemplating doing something a little bit more drastic, this might be the opportunity for you to go home with some data, some information that you can help yourself with and find other ways of handling it other than something that's permanent. Remember the old cliche, once you're cut, you're cut. You know, we have Dr. Bryant, we have a dear friend of ours who's a neurosurgeon, and if we send 10 cases to him, he might do surgery on one or two. And he always asks the question, did you do everything that Dr. Browning said to do? Did you, you know, follow through with everything? And if they begin to say no, he says, go back, don't come to me until, he says, because once I cut you, there's no reversing it. That's what people really have to understand. You know, that's the end piece. There's so much more that can be done effectively, efficiently before you get to that place.
Yeah, and you know, I always stress to people when they're high functional low back patients. In other words, they don't have an impairment or a weakness. There's no urgency outside of the pain. They should try all conservative measures before they have a procedure done. Like you said, there's just multiple factors that can go wrong with the surgery. And then, you know, there's the healing process after it. You know, there's some people who just form more scar tissue than others, and scar tissue takes up room. And because the low back is such a small compartment, and that's the reason we do the surgery in the first place, that compartment becomes full of arthritis or thickening of the ligaments. Even when the doctor cleans it out, there's no guarantee that the tissue that's going to heal in its place doesn't encroach on that structure again. So we want to pump the brakes on the surgery when we can.
You know, in my mind, there's very few reasons that anybody should consider surgery until they've explored everything else that can be done. Because, again, going back to the statement, once you're cut, you're cut. And that's gone now. Sometimes they're taking bone out, laminectomy, or sometimes they're removing several layers. There's no stabilization there except for the muscle and the ligaments and so forth. And you have to do the rehab and dedicate yourself to exercise for the rest of your life. Here's a question, and patients will ask this often, particularly if I sit there and tell them, you know, that those gliding points that you talked about, the facets, the ligaments that have gotten thickened. Doc, if I go through this and we really do everything that that you asked me to do, will those go back to normal? What's your position on that?
Well, normal is a relative term. What they mean is, does the arthritis that we see on the film magically disappear? And no, that doesn't usually occur. But the arthritis as I describe it, is just like rust. You can have a rusty car that drives really good. The idea is we don't want the rust or the arthritis to progress, and we want the joint to be as functional as possible. Healthy joints typically don't deteriorate. It's when they become damaged or they become under excessive load, then they break down. So if you can do those types of things, then I don't really worry about what the x-ray looks like when the person says, hey, I feel great, I've been playing golf. You just go about your business. The same thing holds true with a person who has a really arthritic knee. I see this time and time again. They have arthritis, a little bit of pain, super high functional, and they ask, well, should I get a surgery? And I'm like, no, why would you do that? You're high functional. We can get the pain under control. Let's just, you know, stay the course.
Yeah, it's amazing to me how quickly people want to cut. Sometimes I say, you know, maybe he's got a house payment that he's got to make this month. And I shouldn't say that because the majority of guys out there are really decent, ethical people. But I'm trying to drive home the point that there's so many other things that should be done, can be done to strengthen relative to lifestyle. And, you know, periodically, like you get your mouth checked, you want to get the body checked. So speaking of the mouth, patient comes in, they have low back pain, pelvic pain, and they start ending up with a little sciatica, leg pain down the back of the leg. And they didn't do anything. You've seen the patient before. But their only history, the only thing that has changed, is last week they saw the dentist. How can that episode cause low back pain?
Yeah, so that's the million-dollar question, and we don't talk about it, I think, hardly at all in our circles. I mean, there's a few guys that do. But every muscle in the body is coordinated through what we call gait, the way we move. So when we swing one arm, we swing the opposite leg. And in order to do that and keep our body moved forward, that involves the muscles in the neck and the jaw. So when we have dysfunction in the jaw, it will have a retrograde effect on everything else in the body. Now, that seems quite odd, but I would encourage people to Google about dental appliances in athletics and increase performance. Exactly what I said, increase performance. There's dentists that have developed these splints and these orthotic devices that athletes wear that are above and beyond just mouth guards, and they can quantify that their performance as far as speed, vertical leap, agility actually changes. So the TMJ becomes kind of a Pandora's box in a good way, that you can help stabilize some folks that have had chronic problems that have never gotten any help from any doctor anywhere.
Yeah, it's amazing. I remember many, many years ago when I first became truly aware of it, and the relationship to the spine and so forth. If you move the dental arch too quickly, you can see a patient develop a scoliotic pattern. In my book, Asia's Health, Health is a Do-It-Yourself Program, I wrote about a young girl who was 11, 12 years old, perfectly straight spine. She goes to the dentist, we have braces put on. In a matter of 3 months, she ends up with a 27-degree spinal curvature. And fortunately, thank God, I knew a dentist out of University of Buffalo Dental School, a professor there who does our work, and we were able to fix her. But people don't understand that intimacy, that relationship. The TMJ, the temporomandibular joint, as you brought out, has such profound and specific relationship to that pelvic structure. Your mouth moves, your pelvis moves. And just like your right shoulder, your left hip, your right elbow, your left knee, they all coordinate. That's the normal gait pattern.
Exactly. And a good neuromusculoskeletal dentist is worth his weight in gold. So, we have a tendency to make sure we stay in contact with those folks, because when we need that referral, they become extremely helpful. Now, having said that, it's not that much.
Hang on for a second. We have we got to stop for a break in just a second. I want you to pick that up as we conclude. But my guest today, Dr. Harlan Browning, the professor, we're talking about something that is extremely common, 90% of the population. And this Wednesday evening, June 1st, Dr. Browning will be your presenter. If you got low back pain, if you've ever had any low back pain, this is your opportunity. You need to call and register for the class. We're coming up to a break. Don't go away. We'll be right back after some very important information.
This is Dr. Tom Rozelle Live on 105.9 FM WMAL.
Welcome back, everybody. Dr. Tom Rozelle here. You've been listening to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live and an extremely interesting program. I've had the pleasure of spending over 20 years with a man who I consider one of the best in our world, Dr. Harlan Browning. He's your presenter this Wednesday evening, the 1st of June, and your guest, my pleasure of having him on the program today. Dr. Browning, we're talking about low back pain. We're talking about, how to open that door and find out what's really causing the problem, fixing it, putting people back into a position where they can reclaim their lives, because once your back is gone, it affects everything that you like to do, would want to do, and people basically check out of life. And we're talking about 90% of the population that will experience some low back pain. This Wednesday evening, it's always a pleasure, even all the years I've known you, to sit and listen to the intuitiveness and the insight that you have, because there's very few that can compare. But what are you going to cover this Wednesday?
Well, I mean, we're certainly going to look at a lot of anatomy and biomechanics. For those folks that have sat in on some of my lectures, it doesn't matter if it's low back or even digestive stuff. We talk a lot of anatomy, because when you understand the way that we're designed, it makes it easier to reverse engineer. And that's what it comes down to. If we have dysfunction in an area, understand the way the area works, we can kind of come up with a plan to go backwards in time and repair it. We're going to look at different modalities of treatments. In our office, we're big proponents of having a big toolbox. We do lots of different things. I see a lot of people who have low back pain that try to exercise their way out of their problem, and it doesn't help, and sometimes it makes it worse because their problem is mechanical and mobility. So you have to incorporate the manipulation of the spine. You have to incorporate things to reduce inflammation and break up scar tissue, like lasers and ultrasound. Certainly therapeutic exercise is beneficial. Then you can add in other things that are really good adjuncts. acupuncture, very, very profound as far as its effect to calming the nervous system. And like we talked about before, sometimes the person's diet and their GI tract is sabotaging them and they just don't realize it.
You know, when you talk about exercise and everybody, well, show me what to exercise. How do I do it? When I get to that place where I want to give a patient some rehabilitation, I check the muscle pattern in the motion of rehabilitation. So let's say, for example, we're just doing a sitting marching pattern, right? Lifting the knees up one at a time. And normally if they went to a traditional therapist, they're going to say, do it 10 times on each side. Well, that may be way too much. So what I do with the patient is I will have them do two and check the muscle. I'll have them do three, check the muscle. Four, check the muscle. Wherever the muscle inhibits or weakens, that's as many repetitions as I have them do until I see them next time to see if they can do better.
Yeah, that's an excellent way to do it. Just let that person's body tell you what it can handle. The one thing that I'll throw in here, because we're coming to a close, is there's a hierarchy in which the nervous system and the body work, and standing on the top of that pyramid is joint function. So if we have poor joint function, it just doesn't move properly, then you're going to have reflexively poor muscle function. The thing is, you have to restore the joint function in order to get the muscle function back. So you want to start by improving mobility in the joint, then giving the exercises, and then lo and behold, the person responds to those stretches that used to give him a lot of pain.
Unfortunately, they're going to have to listen to the rest of that on Wednesday evening. We're coming up to that place and time. We have to say goodbye. Remember, we do this for one reason and one reason only. It's simply because we want you to have the best information possible, and we love you all, and we truly do. Our life is dedicated to serving you at the highest level possible to make sure you have the opportunity to live your life fully. We'll see you next week. Take care. Bye.